This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Street Knowledge, sitting in studio with Chris Graham. I'm your host, Jeff Fife, firing away questions at AFB editor and owner, Chris Graham. Chris, how are you?
I'm great, Jeff. It's great to have you back on the podcast. You always, you know, your insight as a UVA fan and close observer always helps these podcasts.
I'm a hyper-passionate UVA fan when it comes to Virginia Tech, so it's good timing. We run into each other at the cardio room at the Y. We start talking like, hey, this is great content for a podcast. Let's get together and chat. So normally I give you the pre-questions ahead of time. I'm going, this is some of the things I want to talk to you about. You haven't been you don't know what I'm going to ask.
And I'm kind of glad. I think these are better. Yeah, I think it's better this way.
So let's fire away. We're at the midway point of the season, even though the majority of this season has been the pre-conference contest. But if you had to give a mid-season grade to the Cavaliers, what would you give them?
You know, I'm going to be hard and say B+. To the number two team, well, the number one team in the coaches poll, number four team in the AP poll. You know, the pre-ACC schedule was light, and it wasn't. That's not Tony's fault. They scheduled harder than it turned out to be. South Carolina was in the Final Four 2 years ago. And a road game at South Carolina should be a tough contest. They're down this year. The battle for Atlantis, those teams, except for Wisconsin, are down this year. It should have been tougher than it turned out to be. At Maryland was a good contest. It was a good test for Virginia to play in the Comcast Center. That's a tough place to play basketball, I'll tell you. But before the ACC season, I would have said a B. But then you beat Florida State the way Virginia did, 29-point game with 2 minutes to go. Leonard Hamilton presses the walk-ons to make it look good. And then Florida State goes and almost beats Duke a few days later. I think that one area where I would say that I would have liked to have seen more development, we've started to see it more, is the development of the bench. We've seen Jay Huff get some minutes up late. I think that's important. I would like to have seen maybe Marco Anthony or maybe Cody Statman get more minutes in the backcourt. This team is largely a seven-man team. If Huff gets more minutes consistently as we continue on an ACC play, it'll be an eight-man team. I'm fine with an eight-man team. I'm not sure about a seven-man team. So I'm saying B+, and boy, I'm looking a gift horse in the mouth when I say that.
Yeah, 15-0, a B+. That's a tough grade. I'm glad I didn't have you in college. Up to this point in the season, what's the biggest surprise for you?
Just from a Virginia standpoint?
Yes.
Kihei Clark's got to be the biggest surprise, to say the least. UC Davis was the only other school to offer him a scholarship. UC Davis, which until you heard me say those words a few weeks ago when we started talking about Kihei Clark, you didn't know UC Davis existed either. So, and the fact that at 5'9", about 160, those might be generous numbers as far as what his height and weight are. It was not expected when you saw that this kid was coming from there. He was a two-star recruit, then he became a three-star recruit when Tony offered him. I think Tony got a little bit of a benefit of a star bonus because, hey, I'm Tony Bennett. I don't recruit two stars, so maybe that's why they gave Kihei a third star. There was no thought that this kid, at least from the outside looking in, that this kid would play at all this year if he ever would play down the road. And then he comes in and plays right away, first game of the season. He played 25 minutes, and he's been playing consistently 20 to 25 to 30 minutes a game for this team. He started several games for this team. He's playing through a broken wrist and surgery, and he's not putting up huge numbers, but what he does defensively with what there's so many other guys who are offensive weapons on this team. They don't need him to go out and score. What he does defensively is he ratchets it up as far as intensity on pressure on the ball, on the point guard, the opposing point guard. He's a one-man full-court press. You see Tony now full-court pressing some to get the ball, to make it harder for the other teams to get the ball off the court. So Kihei Clark is really – it's transformed this team. A little 5'9 guy from California that nobody literally had on their radar has made this team a better team.
I was very worried that he wouldn't be able to stack up against ACC caliber talent point guards. It's early yet. Justin, Florida State, BC, how are you feeling he's done up to this point?
He's done what he's needed to do. And I think maybe, did you turn your mic on back by accident?
Nope. Mike's hot.
Mike's hot, okay. I think that perhaps – you're okay. We'll see tomorrow night. We're taping this on Monday. So Tuesday night, Virginia Tech. I think he'll be important against Justin Robinson. Off the bench, he's not going to start. I don't think he'll start. Mamadou Diakite's been getting the starts of late since Kihei had the broken wrist. He didn't miss any games, but he went back to the bench when he broke the wrist, had the surgery, that exam break. He came back, and he's been playing still 25 minutes off the bench. But Robinson's a guy that gave Virginia fits last year in the win in Charlottesville for Virginia Tech, because he's 6'2", he's 185, he's really quick. He's too quick for Ty Jerome to play point guard defense against on a consistent basis. I don't know that Kyle Guy is somebody you want to really run at him for 40 minutes, and I don't think Robinson's going to come out of the game tomorrow night if the game is competitive all the way through, because you don't want to wear Kyle out and take him away from what he can do offensively. If you have him playing that hard defense against their best offensive player, and I think that even though he's not the leading scorer, I think Robinson is their best offensive player. So I think Clark is going to play an important role. He'll be the first guard off the bench. He'll come in around the 15:50 mark or so, whatever the first media timeout is. He'll play his 20 minutes. He might play 25. And he'll just, you know, when he's in the game, he's going to be on Robinson, and he's going to put ball pressure on. And let's see if he can frustrate Robinson the way he frustrated some other guards, the VCU guards, for example. And I think he's done a good job just being a sort of a pest. I mean, the reason he got into games in the first place was because he was a pest in practice against Jerome, and Jerome's a guy that's being looked at as a first-round NBA pick. And so I think the test is tomorrow night for him, if he can compete on a consistent basis in the ACC. If he can compete with Robinson, he can compete with anybody.
So let's transition to Hell Week. you've got two. I don't know. I'm sure, because it's the ACC, that there are people with back-to-back top 10 games that they have to square off against. But it seems like a pretty tough week on anybody's standards. So the important question is, how do you get a Virginia Tech graduate off your porch? You pay for the pizza. So let's talk about Tuesday night.
I should have Scott on this podcast with you. Yeah, Scott German would. You guys have a good row there. Yeah.
Oh, and your wife is downstairs, so I'll be respectful.
Well, got the door shut. She can't hear you.
That's right. That's a good thing.
And she won't listen to every word of this. Yeah.
You know, I don't give Virginia Tech a lot of credit, but I'm on. You know, I'm just.
And you're in a room with somebody who does.
Right. So let me ask you about that. That was one of the surprising things as we were talking earlier, you know, pre-podcast today. Are they for real? Do they deserve the top 10 ranking?
I think so. Now, you know, and I've talked about this with Scott. In fact, we were on our podcast Saturday night after the win over Clemson. You know, Scott would point out that they haven't played a tough schedule, and they haven't. And they lost at Penn State, which is not a good loss. They lost by 1 point at Penn State in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. That's not a feather in the cap for Virginia Tech. But I look at the efficiency numbers, the KenPom.com, and it's adjusted defensive efficiency, offensive efficiency numbers. So these adjust to, you know, the numbers are adjusted to your strength of schedule. And, I mean, they're good. They're top 10 in the country, offensive efficiency, number 8 in the country right now. Defensively is a surprise. You don't think of Virginia Tech playing defense. Last year they were 78th in the country. The year before they were 156th. This year they're 21st. In points per possession defensively. And so I think what that says is this is quietly a much better team. Now, it's not a big team. He'll go four, he being Buzz Williams, the coach, he'll go four guards. Kerry Blackshear is the only post guy he'll play. Not to say that they won't have guys in the post catching the ball on offense and that kind of thing, but largely it's Blackshear and four guards. They're not deep. They'll go seven deep as well, like Virginia. But they're hard-nosed, and the guys they put on the floor are good. You know, I'll take their three against any big three. Blackshear in the post is their second-leading scorer. Robinson is a third-leading scorer, but he averages close to 6 assists a game, a 2-to-1 assist-turnover ratio. And then Nikhil Alexander-Walker is averaging 19 points a game. He's shooting 54% from the field, 45% from three-point range, shooting 5.5 three-pointers a game. So it's not like that's a number that's based on a low number of three-point shots. That kid can put the ball in the basket. And then Ahmed Hill is actually also scoring double figures, 12.7 a game, 44.8% from three-point range. They can put the ball in the basket. They can defend. They're a good team.
The only team to beat Virginia in the entire ACC last year, including the tournament, obviously. What a bizarre statement to even roll off your tongue. Not just the Virginia Tech beat Virginia on February 10th, my birthday. Hokies.
Congratulations.
I appreciate that. But the fact that Virginia didn't lose any other ACC games, defense has improved. Virginia's offense has improved as well.
Yes.
Does Buzz do anything different in what you saw? What type of attack and how do they attack Virginia defensively last year, and do you see them having any success as Virginia's a little bit hot right now?
Yeah, they played straight up in the first game in Blacksburg last year. When I say straight up, they played man defense. They didn't switch things up from what they had normally done at that point. And they lost 78-52. Virginia was really, that was a game with like 60 possessions. So they were putting the ball in the basket at will in that game, Virginia was. Second game, they played, I've never seen a team in any situation play the zone defense that Tech played. When you're in the media section at Virginia, you're actually not at center court like you are in a lot of places. You're up in section 108, so you're behind one of the baskets. And so you're looking down at the floor in a very unique way from what you normally see in a media situation. And so I could see, they had all five guys had a foot in the paint. I've never seen a zone defense this way. They basically said, Virginia, shoot threes and beat us. If you can make threes, congratulations, you win. And Virginia shot 38 threes in that game, made 11 of them. This is a Virginia team that shoots threes well, but they in that game they didn't. A guy was 3 of 14, Jerome was 2 of 11. So you see teams zone Virginia a lot because Virginia runs a motion offense. It's the two big set screens, the three littles, I don't think the littles is the right term, but the 1, 2, and 3 runoff screens, and it's a constant motion flow of offense. And when you play zone against that, you take that away because, the motion works because you're running off screens and then the bigs roll or they pick and pop, and it creates open shots off of that movement. Well, now Tony's got a good zone offense. The good zone offense they use, for a couple of years it was Isaiah Wilkins would be, you find that soft spot in the zone. In a 2-3 zone, the soft spot's usually right there at the foul line. So you flash a guy to the foul line. You dump it in there. It's a high, kind of like a high post. So then the guy who catches the ball there, it used to be Wilkins. It became DeAndre Hunter last year. You catch the ball there, then the defense has to decide. Do you sag on that guy? If you do that, the wings might be open jump shots off the pass that gets them moving towards the basket when they get ready to shoot a three-point jump shot. Or if the back line of the defense comes in, then you dump it to one of your bigs and they get a dunk. So you have a dive play off that. Or if none of that happens, and they sag off the guy with the ball, then you drive the basket or you shoot the little jump shot. Hunter was great at that last year. He averaged 13.7 points a game in the three games Virginia played against teams who play zone. Virginia won all three of those games. Actually, no, they lost the Tech game. I've got to correct myself there. Lost that game, but he shot well in all those games. He shot 67% from the field in those three games. So even though he played well, the three-point shooting didn't work for Virginia last year. They did beat Duke. They did beat Syracuse in those matchups. The key in this game is going to be if Buzz comes out with that similar defense, do you see Hunter play that role? Do you maybe see Jay Huff play that role? Huff can hit that little shot as well. He's got obviously it's 7-1. He can see over top of the defense if there's a zone defense being played. You got to presume Buzz is going to switch things up a little bit. I don't know if it means he's going to not have the – I mean, literally, they had every guy had a foot in the paint. Again, I've never seen that before with a defense. Do you switch that up a little bit? Do you mix that up with some man trying to throw Virginia off with their play calling? Do you go all man and say, hey, we're playing good defense this year. We don't need to go gimmick defense. Virginia's offense, though, is real deal. When you talk about – we talked about Tech's defense being so good, ranked 21st defensive efficiency-wise. The best team that Tony's had finish a full season in the offensive efficiency ratings was the 2015-2016 team that lost in the Elite Eight to Syracuse. God forbid, I hate that he mentioned that game. That one hurts worse to me than UMBC. That team was that close to a Final Four. That team finished 8th in the country offensive efficiency-wise. That team had Malcolm Brogdon. It had – Anthony Gill, it had Mike Toby, it had London Forensic. That was a pretty good offensive team. This team is right now ranked 5th in the country in offensive efficiency. This team's better than that team in putting the ball in the basket in terms of points per possession. So this is a good Virginia team against a good Virginia Tech defense.
I checked the line before coming over. Virginia is 9.5-point favorites, which, you had two different outcomes significantly last year when we played Virginia Tech. What is your prediction for this game? Are we going to see more of the Virginia at Virginia Tech outcome or what the Hokies brought to Charlottesville last year?
I'm the guy who gave a B-plus to the number one team in the coaches' poll, so I guess I'll say I'm going to look towards more of a possession-by-possession game. Now, I also said that for the Florida State game. I was talking to guys on Press Row before that game, within an hour before that game. Oh, wow, this is going to be a tough one. Florida State's big. They got all these numbers and everything else. And that game did not turn out to be that case. I still think that the jury's out a bit on Virginia, just because we haven't, Wisconsin and Maryland were great wins. I'm thinking that South Carolina win's looking better. They're playing better of late. They're winning at South Carolina looking better, but, you know, then you beat the heck out of Florida State. I think the win at Clemson. Clemson's 0-3 in the ACC, but I think that wins, you know, they also had to play Duke and Syracuse their first two games on the road. So, you know, winning by 20 there against a team that was desperate for a win, that's actually pretty impressive for Virginia. But Virginia Tech does not have what every other team I think goes into JPJ, except for maybe Duke, and I'm saying maybe Duke when you head into JPJ, which is we can't win here. Virginia has a 110 record since 2012-2013 at home. 100 wins, 10 losses. That's a 90.9% win percentage. Last year, 15-1. We know who gave them the one, though, and that was Virginia Tech. So, you know, I'm looking forward to, I don't mean that in a way that I actually am looking forward to, but I'm looking for a tough game tomorrow night.
So if you're going to take the spread, you'd take the Hokies, but predict Virginia would win.
I'll pick Virginia to win, and it's going to be close. I really feel like it's going to come down to the last couple minutes in this game. I do. I really do.
Well, right after the Hokies, we get the joy of Duke. I feel like Duke is a little more hype than real, but it's hard to not think that is one of the top five teams in the country, just your talent alone.
Yeah.
You know, what happens when you have talent like that are all sort of freshmen, and I think Virginia is better than anyone in getting an opportunity to slow that team down, get back on transition, minimize the mistakes that they can feed off of, and they might get into a dogfight they're not ready for. You know, what type of dynamic do you expect to see with Virginia and Duke? Are we going to try to run, or are we going to slow it down like Virginia does?
Slow it down. Virginia will slow it down. And Duke played Texas Tech back before Christmas, I should say, in Madison Square Garden. This Duke doesn't play true road games in non-conference play. They just don't do it. But they played them in the Garden. Home game for them, because that's, you know, there's more Duke alums in New York than there is in North Carolina. But they played that game specifically to say, hey, look, you know, Coach K is saying, got all these 18-year-old kids who are very talented. Texas Tech's got a bunch of 22 and 23-year-olds who also are talented, but also 4 years older. They play a slower pace. They play tough defense. They don't play the pack line, but they play tough defense. That game was totally a dress rehearsal for Virginia. I love the fact that for the first time in I don't know how many years, these teams actually play a home-and-home. It's not just, you know, one game in Charlottesville, one game in Durham. They actually play. This is the first of two between these two. The stakes of this are interesting. It's not just, you know, it's kind of like, okay, now I'm going to use – I did soccer broadcasting for ESPN this past fall. I'll use some soccer terminology here. When you play home-and-home in soccer, they do the aggregate score to determine who advances in a playoff situation. These two games are actually, in my mind, they're positioning for – now, you know, we know that seeding and everything else in tournaments cannot always mean anything, as last year losing to UMBC in the first round of the tournament. But the stakes this year, the number one seed in the East Regional – now, the first two games you'll play in Virginia and Duke, likely both. Let's just assume that they play out the way they should, and they're both top five teams, and they're both number one seeds. They'll both play in Columbia, South Carolina, first two rounds. I'll assume they both win those. You either play East Regional in Washington, D.C., or you play South Regional in Louisville, Kentucky. Both teams want to play in Washington, D.C. Virginia particularly wants to play in Washington, D.C. For Duke, they can play anywhere in the country. They'll have a lot of fans there. If Virginia's playing in Washington, D.C. for the Sweet 16 and possibly the Elite Eight, that the Capital One Arena turns into JPJ Washington, D.C. version. And so for Virginia, it's important to go out there. I mean, for lots of reasons. You want to go out and win the game. But you go out and win Saturday, and then you got the home game coming up in a few weeks. You have the inside track to that number one seed in that East Regional, and you have the ability to play in Columbia, Washington, D.C. when you wear the Final Four. That's the stakes of these games. I mean, these are, you know, among the many things to think about. It has nothing to do with X's and O's, player, personnel, everything else, but those are the stakes of these games.
Of course, my dream scenario would be Radford travel as the 16 seed against Virginia into Columbia. And now, in the oddity, I would not pull for Radford, my alma mater, but I think about the good old hustling Highlanders undefeated in the Big South. Whoa. However, they did go into Texas and beat Texas. They did go into Notre Dame and beat Notre Dame. They should have beaten Maryland, but they kind of hiccuped at the end. I would love to see if there was a 16 seed.
How about Radford-Duke? How about Reverend Duke?
I don't want Duke.
You don't want Duke?
I want to see them travel together. I want to see UVA.
No, Rockford. they would play again. They play Columbia.
But
still see. I'll get you tickets.
I appreciate that. But good old Radford, they get the play-in game, and then we get sent to Dayton, and, you know.
Yeah.
They need some love and respect for the Big South. But I digress. What do you expect to see in terms of – we're obviously going to try to slow down Duke. Who controls that tempo, and is that truly the success to victory for this game?
I don't know that it's guaranteed that Virginia will control the pace. And I say that, I mean, they actually played, it was the Marshall game. There was actually a much faster pace in terms of number of possessions. I think that game actually had 72 to 74 possessions, I think, somewhere in that range. But Virginia won that game 164. I wondered when I watched that game if Virginia may not have been testing themselves. Kind of like I said, Duke played Texas Tech to give itself the test of, let's see how we play against a slow team. Marshall made the NCAA tournament, won 25 games and a tournament game last year. That's not a bad team that Virginia beat 164. I wonder if Tony didn't schedule that game preparing for Duke. That said, Virginia is not, you know, they're not going to do anything different than they normally do. They're going to do the best they can to drop five guys back after they shoot the ball and you know, kind of play hockey defense, I like to call it, because, you know, they'll drop everybody back. They're not going to let the ball get over their heads. Duke, I thought it was the 2014-2015 team, their team of the one-and-done era, the one the national championship. That year, the two teams played in JPJ, and I remember what Duke did in that game to try to speed the pace up was, you know, because what Virginia does so well, one, if you're, you know, fifth in the country offensive efficiency, you're putting the ball in the net a lot, and that itself slows things down. They don't turn the ball over a lot. That slows things down. You know, there's not a lot of live ball turnovers, even among their few turnovers. And so there's not a lot of opportunities for fast breaks. What Duke did in that 2015 game that Duke ended up winning 69-63 in JPJ was their inbounds pass after a made basket, after a made free throw, they almost threw the ball to half court because Virginia then, I mean, you know, and this is what's different about Virginia this year, but that Virginia defense, and really until this year, Virginia defensively, after a made basket, everybody ran back to the other side of the court. They didn't put any pressure in the backcourt. And so Duke took advantage of that by throwing that inbounds pass again almost to half court. And so they're moving, you know, the ball's already there with 2 seconds off the shot clock, they're already in their offense. And eventually Duke got some flow to their offense. Now Virginia this year with Kihei Clark, the one-man full court press, I like to call him. And then also, it's not like Tony's running a full court press when he does. He runs a zone trap, and he's been doing it three-quarter court, some full court, some half court traps just to slow you down. Not intending to turn you over. Just to slow you down, make it so that when you're not initiating your offense until 22 seconds left in the shot clock. I think that's from Duke because this Duke team, they're good. I mean, you know, yeah, I've watched more Duke basketball this year. I've almost watched as much Duke basketball as I've watched Virginia basketball, anticipating these two great matchups. They're good. You know, Barrett, he shoots it a little too much for my liking. Reddish doesn't shoot it enough for my liking. We saw when Williamson went down against Florida State, Reddish looked pretty good. You know, all three of those kids are talented and hyped for the reason they are. They're thin. Their numbers aren't as you know, they don't have a lot of guys on the bench that can contribute, but they're good. And this is the best Duke defensive team. Virginia's ranked, I could pull the number up here real quick, but Virginia's in the top three in defensive efficiency, and Duke is right there with them. Let me get the internet to work here real quick. Virginia's second in adjusted defensive efficiency. Duke's third, so... This is the best Duke defensive team he's had since his championship team. I think Coach K's ready for Coach Bennett in terms of, you know, he thinks he can win a slowdown game. I think Bennett thinks he can – I don't think he can win a fast break game with Duke, but I think he can selectively run and take advantage of some Duke live ball turnovers, and he's not afraid to have his guys out there taking advantage of those kind of situations. I think they've both been adjusting for each other all season long.
So what's your prediction? Obviously, Virginia, this may be the first game that they're not favored.
It'll be the first and I think only game they won't be favored.
Yeah, year, probably so.
At this stage.
What do you think of the outcome? Do you think Virginia pulls this off? You got game day crowd. You're going to have, you know, doesn't really make a difference. Their energy level is going to be peak November. Who's walking in the door? But there'll be a little bit of extra juice.
I will say I've been to some games at Cameron Indoor. The reputation – for the most part, exceeds what you actually see in the arena, unless it's Duke, Carolina. I think, though, those Duke folks know that Virginia is the real rival now, which is interesting to say. You know, there was that GoFundMe campaign a few weeks ago to get money for KJ Mora.
Which is brilliant.
Well, but Kyle Guy says, let's make this happen,
bring it.
Hoos.
Yeah.
Right? So he
and
said,
the
bring
Hoos
it on.
Funded it, too.
Hoos funded it, too, yeah.
I
so,
love it.
You know, there is that back and forth. I mean, I think those kids know and the fans know that, you know, so they will. They will be, it'll be a lively environment, to say the least. I think they're looking, I mean, because Virginia won the last game at Duke. I guess Virginia's won the last two in the series. And so, you know, Virginia's won 5 ACC championships in the last 5 years with the ACC tournaments and regular seasons combined. That's obviously half of the total. Carolina's won 3. Duke's only won 1 of those. So I think that, they definitely have this mark on their schedule. For the Duke players, too, the individual, the 3 guys that are looked at as one-and-done kids this year, there will be a million scouts there because they want to the scouts will want to see how do those guys play against – Virginia's defense. How do those guys play against a disciplined Virginia team that won't give you easy stuff? I'll be interested to see how Williamson plays, assuming he will play, which I assume he will. As we're talking
supposed
right now,
tonight
against Syracuse, yeah, with the poke in the eye the other day. But you know, Williamson, because I think Barrett and Reddish. I mean, I don't want to say they're easy to guard, but they're talented as heck. But you know, they're sort of conventional guys. I mean, 6'7" guys who can shoot and dribble drive and everything else. But Williamson is the guy that, to me, now, I don't know that he projects as the best guy at the pro level of the three. I think, you know, I hate to agree, but I think Barrett projects as the best guy of the three. I mean, hell, Reddish might be the second best guy of the three at the pro level. But at the college level, 6'7", 285, who guards him from Virginia? I don't know who, you know, because if you put Jack Salt on him to match up physically with him, well, he'll take Jack outside and drive around him and shoot threes. He's not a great three-point shooter, but if you leave him open, he can hit the open three. If you put Hunter on him, if you put Key on him, he's got 60 pounds on them, and it's not necessarily a bad 60 pounds. So, you know, I think the secret there is going to be get him in early foul trouble and see if you can, you know, limit his minutes. I think you can go go straight up against Reddish and Barrett, and I feel good about those, but I do worry about Williamson. So, you know, I gave Virginia a B+. I guess with home court advantage, I'll give it to Duke this game this weekend. And you don't know how much it hurts me to say that. But I think that Duke, with that advantage, now, second time in JPJ, Virginia will have had a game to get used to what those kids are talent-wise. I think we split. But I don't know that I feel great about this weekend. I think it'll be a tight game again, but I don't know that Virginia escapes with a win.
So let's look at the AP ranking number 4. If I gave you an over-under of 4, fast forward to next Monday when the new rankings come out, what's your prediction? Over-under 4 for Virginia?
I guess I'll say push. So
you can't push.
Can't push, all right.
Because you're predicting a Virginia victory over Virginia Tech.
And then it's lost
and a
to
loss
Duke.
To
but
Duke.
I'm thinking close win over Virginia Tech and a close loss to Duke. And, you know, the way the writers go there, they might actually have – the writers might have more respect for Virginia. As a result of that, I don't think they have enough respect. The coaches have voted Virginia number 1 the last 3 weeks and 4 the last 5 weeks. The writers, I don't know why there's that less respect. Maybe the writers are less forgiving about UMBC, which was forever ago now. That was a different team, literally. I mean, you know, a lot of the same guys are back, but a different team. So, you know, yeah, I guess I'll go over because I think if things hold the way I projected to go, it'll be close, but I think they could get up to 3. And, you know, we're not knowing what else happens to anybody else. Let's assume everybody else wins. Let's assume that, I guess, Michigan doesn't lose this week and Tennessee doesn't lose this week. If Virginia, you know, goes 1-1 against this schedule, you know, perhaps they jump Tennessee back up to number 3, and Tennessee's a slight, you know, slight dip to number 4. But, you know, I don't know. Another question you could ask could be, I'm going to put myself in interviews. Which is more likely, sweep or losing both games? And I'd say sweep is more likely than losing both games. I don't think Virginia loses to Virginia Tech. I think it's a tight game. I'm a little nervous going into that game, but I don't think Virginia loses that game. I think Virginia's got a decent shot of winning at Duke. So if I had to go there, I'd go sweep.
Interesting. You and I typically would get together before the ACC slate begins and do a little ACC preview. Since we didn't get an opportunity, we've already had a couple games underneath.
I'm glad we didn't, by the way, because now yeah. Now we have some sight on these teams. Yeah.
That's right. So now I would ask you the same question I've asked you the last several years. Fast forward to the beginning of the ACC tournament. Who are your top four seeds?
So Virginia and Duke, Virginia Tech. And I would have said North Carolina, even as recently as about what? About 1 o'clock? I don't know what time it was. Their game was on Saturday. Whatever time they played on Saturday against Louisville. I do not know how to figure what happened there. Louisville just lost to Pitt. And then they went to the Dean Dome and beat them by 21. The biggest beatdown in the history of Roy Williams coaching at home. That Carolina team, until that stage, I mean, they put a tough schedule preseason, pre-ACC season. I thought they had, you know, they lost three games in that, but they played such a murderous schedule that I had no problem with them losing three games, given what they played. Oh, God, I don't know. I mean, I think they're still, because they beat State at State, I would have put State in the mix for a top four. Florida State, I would have had in the mix for, if we had done this before the ACC season, I would have probably had the four I just said, Virginia Duke, Virginia Tech, and North Carolina, I would have Florida State really close to that. Florida State, I'm not so sure now. They struggle to beat Miami at home. Miami's really, really struggling this year. You could say that they had a nice bounce back in the loss to Duke, but Duke played a whole second half without Zion Williamson. The State losing at home. I guess Louisville, you could say, hey, great, Louisville. But then Louisville lost to Pitt on Tuesday, I think it was last week. So Syracuse gave up 59% shooting to Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech had a good week last week. You know, they go to the Carrier Dome and blow out Syracuse. They lose at home in a tight one to Virginia Tech. So, yeah, I guess I'll stick with Virginia Duke, Virginia Tech, and UNC. And I think in that order right now, actually, too. You know, God forbid I say nice things about the Hokies around you and Scott, but I think Tech's the third best team in the ACC right now.
And I don't think they're going to make the double bye day. For some reason, I just think they're not going to make the top four. But that's truly because I hate them. I have no real statistical knowledge or background.
That's just blind hatred.
Blind hatred of the Hokies. That's all I got. Biggest surprise, I know it's three games in of the ACC at this stage.
Georgia Tech, I think. The biggest positive surprise, at least. Just that they've played well. They beat Wake, which, you know, you and I and three guys that you played noon ball with today at the Y could give Wake a good game, at least. I'm not sure if we could beat them, but we could give them a good game.
With today's talent at the Y League, we could have beat
Wake. Okay.
Well, we had some guy out of Arizona that showed up.
I'll just sit on the bench and let you guys do it. You know, so they beat Wake, but then they played Tech tough. And yet, when I watched that game from start to finish, I wondered if that was Virginia Tech playing down, Virginia Tech having a first road game jitters kind of thing. And then you see Georgia Tech go and shoot 59% against Syracuse. That's to that stage, a good Syracuse team had been 2-0 in the ACC. The other guys back from last year, not a lot. They have all five starters back from last year, so. So Georgia Tech, positive surprise. I'd say the surprise in the other direction could be, I guess, you know, it's only one game, but Carolina. I just until that loss, and now that Carolina's lost to Louisville the way they did, they shot 34%. Luke May was 3 of 14. They had even in the win against NC State, 23 turnovers in the win against NC State. They had 14 turnovers in the loss to Louisville. You know. Drawing board, possibly for Roy. I mean, I think they lost to Texas in the pre-ACC season too. So
they lost to Texas, and then Radford shows up and beats them, and it doesn't make that game look very pretty.
Yeah. So now I'm just wondering. I mean, they beat the heck out of Gonzaga in the Dean Dome, but you know, was that an aberration? Which is the aberration right now? I think the jury's still very much out on Carolina. So I'll say a surprise there because they got a lot of talent to be still trying to figure out who they got.
Augusta Free Press is gearing up for the ACC tournament. I noticed you've got out the sponsorship package opportunities. I don't know if anybody has jumped on any of those tiers.
We have Bear Creek folks who sponsored our trip to the Belk Bowl. We don't have the live read in front of me right now, but Brian Miniger, Victoria Miniger, the Bear Creek deck builders, and everything you can possibly put together for home building around your house. They're back on board as our major sponsors, so nice. We have some other spots still open. For that. But yes, Scott, we've already reserved our hotel room. We've already done the scouting report because we were there for the Belk Bowl. So In fact, you know, some positive, you know, using golf terminology, we have some positive swing memories now. We went to a game in the Spectrum Center. Virginia didn't lose. Now, Virginia didn't play. But we left last year, you know. There was a game against the team you might have heard of, UMBC. And, you know, Scott and I, of course, we're there for the weekend. We got a great hotel. We're right down in uptown Charlotte, beautiful area. And we check into our hotel and, you know, everything else. And then we get back from the game and we're like, oh, we're not staying in Charlotte. We're not waking up in Charlotte. We just left that night. Got home at 7 in the morning. So not positive memories from that trip in Charlotte, but very positive after this. We got to see Joe Harris play in the Spectrum Center. And then Virginia football wins a game in the Panthers' home stadium in Bank of America Stadium. And so Virginia, we left Charlotte with a Virginia team having won a game in Charlotte. And so, yeah, looking forward to it. It'd be a fun time. Jeff, you've done that with me. You know, we both grew up watching ACC basketball. I'm sure you did like I did, skipped school on Fridays at least a few times, or you know, got that mysterious malady that would come down, ACC terminitis, to be able to watch those. Back then, the first day was on a Friday at 12 o'clock. 1 year I couldn't because I was in the spelling bee in seventh grade, and Virginia played while that was going on, and a teacher thankfully gave me the update. Virginia won. It was Ralph Sampson. You know, they were going to win. But, you know, yeah, it's you know, growing up, watching it on TV and all that stuff, and then being there courtside like we get to sit, I mean, that's a heck of an experience. It's also tiring, but it's a heck of an experience.
Yeah, it's an amazing experience. If anyone gets the opportunity to go, just the fervor and energy of the crowd is not like any traditional games that I've experienced. And Carolina brings, you know, being only watch ACC championship games in the state of Carolina, that energy that the Tar Heels bring, if they're in it, can be.
Actually, you did get a phone call on a Saturday a couple years ago, if you remember. I got to make a nice phone call to somebody. Scott German was ill, so that sucks for Scott. And about 3 o'clock on Saturday, which is kind of late, right? Isn't it kind of late to be 3 o'clock? Hey, Jeff, what are you doing, man? That was in Washington, D.C. that year. And
no, that's true. That's a good point. That was in D.C. Yeah. And when I saw your name come up on the phone, I already had my answer. I'm on my way is what I'm doing.
Yeah, that was that was a great game. Two teams. Carolina was in the Final Four that year. I think they went to the championship game and lost. Wasn't that the game they lost on the buzzer beater? To Villanova, because Villanova has won two of the last three. They won the one in the middle. And Virginia should have been in the Final Four. That team lost against Syracuse. We saw those two teams battling it out right there, a 60-58 final from courtside. There's worse things to do on a Saturday night in March than that. So, it's pretty good.
Well, ACC is must-see TV right now with all the great competition. And there won't be a harder week than this week for the Cavaliers until the ACC tournament. You know, so stay close to the AFP because they're going to have your coverage from behind the scenes and post-game wrap-ups for the activity both in Charlottesville and at Duke.
There is one tougher week, if you can imagine. Well, I don't know if this is a tougher week. February 9th, Duke at home. February 11th at Carolina.
Sandwich around my birthday. February 10th last year is when we lost to the Hokies. So
yeah.
At least we're not playing on my birthday. But that's a tough turn, just the fact that they're 2 days apart. I mean, they get a week break leading into Duke, so at least they get, when they play Miami the Saturday before that, they've got a little bit of time to prepare.
But that deadly double, yeah, Duke at home at Carolina on Monday night, the big Monday game. And, you know, if anybody out there listening wants to help Jeff get a ticket to that Duke UVA game in Charlottesville, I mean, you know, just drop a few $100 donation
here. GoFundMe page. You know, we get the UMBC kid down to Durham, and you get Fife to Charlottesville. Yeah, I'm looking at the secondary market going, I'm just going to stay at home.
Just stay at home that night, yeah. Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Okay. I'm going to stay at home tomorrow simply because that one's more affordable. However, I get into a fervor of significance when it involves the Hokies. And I've already been kicked out of an event out of JPJ previously with you once.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So I'm going to try to avoid any of that experience again. And just sit at home and watch it.
Second time might be the last time, right? So we can't have that happen.
That's true. I'm going to be on somebody's list here shortly.
You're your picture's up in the wall.
That's right. Watch out for Fife. Well, just stay close to AFP. It's been a pleasure, Chris, getting back into the studio. Though the studio's moved again. I think this is the third time that I've been in a different studio, so it's been too long.
Yeah, you know, we got stuff on the walls. It's a game room. We got ping pong. You know, we could have fun up here. And, we move things around, but the sound's better in here. And we have that water. I mean, I got a fridge. I mean, this is like a grown person's.
Yeah, and I don't have to stare at the Yankee stuff right away. It's still here.
It's downstairs. I moved it for you.
You got the mantle jersey.
Yeah, I got there's a Ovechkin, Warren Moon, Matt Schaub. That's a nice one for you. Daniel Murphy, who doesn't play for the Nats anymore. But there's most of my match things are guys who don't play here anymore. So Ferris Bueller, a reference to Animal House. So, yeah, fun stuff.
Just don't get a Harper jersey anytime soon.
No, well, I don't know if Harper's getting a jersey anytime soon, to be honest. Yeah. Him and Machado both are waiting to see what happens.
Who knows? That's for another podcast. So thanks for y'all's time, and good luck to the Hoos for this hell week, and stay close to AFB for all your updates, news, and notes.